Ladies and gentlemen,
good afternoon, everyone. We're going to start the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today. Excuse me.
Oh, sure.
I would like for everyone to silence your phones. This meeting is being recorded. If one from the public who wants to speak, make sure your name gets on the list. We're going to start with our introductions. I'm Denise Rush, and I'm vice chair of this Metro Access Subcommittee. And I'm from Suitland, Maryland. I'll go to my right.
William Proctor, Metro Access.
Martin Nash, Metro Access.
Alan Eads, Metro Access.
Ed McAtee, Fairfax County.
Christopher Colbert, Metro Office of Eligibility.
Charlie Crawford, Silver Spring, Maryland, and access to all from the Council of Governors.
Devin Benedy, Fairfax County, Virginia.
Carl Lambert, Metro Access.
Carl Lambert, Metro Access.
Jennifer Blake, Metro Access.
Janice Carpenter, Metro Access.
Nicole Mack, Metro Access.
County Kitchen, Metro Access.
Robbie Worth, Diamond Transportation.
Case Disability Advocate.
John
Weber, MTM.
Crawford Brown, MTM.
Jim Chaper, VA Policy and Planning.
Sybil Boggess.
Paul Wells, Free.
John Gray, Lee Transportation.
Harley, Whitley Transit.
Donovan Marshall, Transit.
Al Hose, Transit.
Jack Hempstead, First Transit.
Albert Griffin, Superbarrow.
Next is the review of the agenda.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the agenda as written.
Madam Chair, I second the motion.
We did receive a letter today that we need to review. I would like to, if we have time to do business, to discuss the waiver letter that we want to present.
I think it's written here, Mr. Madam Chair, new business, maybe 5:50 p.m., we could bring it up.
Call a question.
Any other changes? Can I get a motion?
No, we have.
Yeah, motion is on the floor.
To accept them with your opinions?
Yes.
So it's been accepted and moved. Thank you. Now can we review the minutes of the prior meeting?
Well, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the minutes as presented.
Madam Chair, I'd like to approve my distinguished colleague. Second motion.
All right. Roll call on it. Everybody agrees?
Yeah.
I have it. Any opposed? Okay, it's been passed. Can we have customer service and outreach report?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm members of the committee. My name is Carlton Brown, the PM. With regard to public comments and member comments from the last committee meeting, there were a total of seven. Out of the seven, five of which required investigations or reinvestigations of customer complaints that may have been formally filed or may not have been formally filed until their public comment. Since that point in time, we have spoken to the customer and investigated fully their complaints and comments. We've also notified the service delivery providers as well as the OCC management to where we believe corrective action has been taken to improve service.
Thank you. Do we no longer have the Michael Wilson Awards? Did I miss that or something? Well, we haven't had it in a while. Is that me or?
Yes, we do have a Michael Wilson Award. We're in the process of picking an employee at this moment, but we want to make sure we bring forth some qualified enough and it has very, very great stats that we can put forth for the committee to move forward, but we are in that process.
Right, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, John.
Thank you. Is this an appropriate time to ask a question in regards to one of the complaints I believe that was raised at the last meeting about the lady that was refused transportation because of her perfume?
You can ask the question.
That's the question. What happened with that?
Yes, sir. Without stating the customer's name, we spoke to the customer directly after the full committee meeting to get further information in detail. Since that point in time, we've spoken with her not on a daily basis, but almost so, just to ensure that her current service has been up to the par from our expectations, but also that she hasn't had that experience again. And reviewing the trip in question, again, all the service delivery providers were here, so the appropriate service provider that provided that trip in question did go back and perform their investigation along with MTM, providing more or less trip information to close it out, and we have addressed that with the customer itself. But in the end, for the record, we don't want anyone. Any of our customers to leave here with the impression that that's acceptable from the operator. And as such, our service delivery providers and the management team have taken steps to ensure that what you receive from operators is customer service. Not to the extent of we don't want you to ride our service because we don't want you to ride as an operator. So it's been addressed in several levels.
So if I'm understanding correctly, first, it will never happen again. And secondly, the appropriate discipline is carried out.
Yes.
Thank you.
We have a presenter to discuss the property use of the seatbelt extension.
Yeah, I'm Al Davis. I work with Fleet at Metro Access. Quite a few months ago, I was receiving some questions about repositioners and extensions for mobility devices and air bands, as well as the extenders that we use for seat belts and seats. And a lot of people were believing they're the same product or the same item. And in fact, they don't work. Neither will exchange. So what I did with through a lot of research, I did find different lengths of extenders that will work with wheelchairs and impairments. And every vehicle we have now is equipped with one of these. It looks like a seat belt. The couplers, both ends of it, will only work with the company called Freedman's. So we have to use this with the mobility device, and then the seatbelt, we have a smaller version fit in the vehicle. I hope to have an actual platform here tonight to kind of do a display, and there's quite a few technical difficulties on that, so we decided to kind of postpone the display. And what my plan is in the spring, when the weather will be a little bit better, we can actually get back outside and possibly have a different type of vehicle with the same type of procurement center, and I can review the difference between everything. What originally was brought up to me was why can't we use a posy belt to extend the mobility device because it will fit. It plugs in, apparently it has been used, but the label right on the posy belt says not for restraint. It is not approved to use in the event of an accident or the need is to restrain somebody in a vehicle and stop suddenly. So the red posy belt that we have is not to be used as an extender for anything in the vehicle. It's kind of a lot of the research I put into that is the first thing they say is the label right on it says not to be used as a security device. So once again, we do have two different extenders. Every vehicle is equipped with at least one of each. For anybody that would like to request one, and, the main thing with the mobility device extender is it does reposition the shoulder harness. The main complaint that I got was the shoulder harness was going across people's faces. It was very discomfort. You know, it had it's actually chafing on the neck. And what this does is it moves it around so the device comes down a little bit over to your side. It's less likely to cause more harm. But I'll have these here today if anybody wants to look at them after the meeting or any questions on that.
Anyone have any questions or comments?
Madam Chair,
I'm curious about one thing. If the driver, you know, for some reason or other can't, doesn't have any, level of the extenders, and now you can't use the posy belt, are they supposed to just call into the dispatcher?
Any questions? It would be called in, but the posy belt is not to be used as any kind of extension.
And you're all getting demand like it's a 2007.
Yes. 207 on
the manufacturers are supplying the.
Yes, it's basically the same manufacturer, different vehicle. It's Friedman is the company that makes this belt sensor.
Anyone else?
Member of the public.
Member
of the public. Yes. Hi.
Yeah.
You don't
need
no volume to talk
without
the
microphone.
Microphone, please. Just to follow up with Ed, it's not that people want to have a posy belt, but repeatedly there are experiences with myself and other people I know that there are no, according to the drivers, no extenders of the other kinds on the vehicle. So it is a matter of not being hooked or using the posy belt as an extender. So that's the situation. It's not like, oh, we'd rather use the posy belt. That's only ever happened in my case, and I have a good friend who has a similar situation. It's when the driver says they do not have any other these other things on their vehicle.
Anyone else?
What do we do in that case?
All right, I didn't understand the question. Every vehicle should be equipped with one of these. Every driver should have. And if it's not yet, it will be.
If I may ask a question, Mr. Davis, so what we're saying is that we remove the posy belt from the vehicle, but we intend
to. Posy belt has a total different purpose. It's not for securing somebody to the vehicle. It's not approved as far as a securement.
Manager. What's the answer? The question answered, what do you do when you don't have
Oh, good evening. The policy gives is when there's not an extender on the vehicle and the driver is supposed to be behind the vehicle, make sure that they have extenders. We will either send out the road supervisor immediately to the scene with an extender for the vehicle, or us will send out another vehicle to pick up the finders and then make sure that we can get that vehicle the extenders that they need so they can continue service from that.
Okay, first Charlie and then Carol.
Thank you. Two quick things. The first thing is, I would appreciate it when somebody speaks to identify yourself when you're speaking, so I know who's talking. And the second thing is, with regards to these extenders, I understood your response just now, you're saying that if the appropriate extender is not there in the vehicle, and a road supervisor will come out with one, and you got a new vehicle with an extender. And my question is it possible that all vehicles could have these when they leave to go into service so that there would be that kind of issue?
Absolutely, and that's supposed to be part of the driver's pre-trip inspection of the vehicle to make sure that they have the extenders. That's part of the necessary equipment for each day of service.
And so you keep a record of each time that that happens and it's not there?
We do. I'm sorry, John Gray with MV Transportation.
Thank you.
Carol.
I'm Carol McDonald. I do have one of those problems in the whole cycle of things. That is, I don't want to see a customer sitting there waiting for a Wilkinson. You have delayed their trip. Just like you on time, they have to go some other time. So I think somewhere along the line, if there's no extender in the van, whoever's in the van shouldn't be held up. We should keep it moving. You understand what I'm saying? Because I've seen so many times that customers are held up because of waiting for a road suit. A road suit not guaranteed to get to you in an hour. A road suit might not get to you for 2 hours. Does that mean everybody in that van has to be penalized? It should not. If there's no extended in the van, then there's going to be consequences for the driver and consequences for the person that got the appointment. They had to book by appointment time. Am I correct? I know I am. I know I am. My problem is I get complaints from people telling me they've been held up by something that happens in the van. I like to alleviate customers being but so late, especially for doctor's appointments, because they tell if they're late, the doctor won't see them if they're more than 15 minutes late. And some doctors, you can't get an appointment to them.
You pay this too, Governor.
You got to pay them. I wouldn't know nothing about that. But I'm just saying, waiting for a road to sound fine, but it's not. Especially when you talk about the extender. I can see an accident sometimes, but I think that really and truly, customers should be inconvenienced because of something else that happened. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Gray.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree in terms of the inconvenience. The challenge is, and I think Mr. Davis was trying to explain this, with the posi belt, it's not made for the safe transportation.
I'm not arguing about safety. I'm just saying, when you wait on a road suit, the road suit might not get there for 2 hours.
That is correct. Now, our average time, I believe, is about 45 minutes. Is that correct?
Mm.
For right now, for what we've been tracking, 45 minutes to an hour, is that correct?
That's roughly correct, but if I could just add to what Mr. Gray is saying. Again, I'm Mark Nash with Metro Access. And along the lines of what Ms. Delaney is saying, the solution is, and all service providers are here tonight, the solution is that if the operator would leave the yard with the proper equipment. It should not get to the point where we need to determine if the road supervisor needs to come out. So service delivery providers have to make sure that they have processes and checks and mechanisms in place to ensure that that doesn't happen, because the driver has what he needs, he or she needs, when they leave the yard. That's the solution.
And they need two vans. Because I've been in the situation when I'm sitting in the van in my care, and the two belts need, and they only have one. We got to stop thinking short term. They need two, and it should be checked before the driver leaves. Posey belt, MacBook, identification, driver's license, and the extenders. Two of them in each vehicle. Because if one's being used, guess what? The next person coming on cannot be on. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to spend no money, but I'm back.
Yeah, you definitely need two extensions.
Yeah.
Because, well, back in, well, that's one line of the community. Well, that they don't have, they usually definitely have one, but I don't know what the cost of the extensions are, but they need two per vehicle. Yeah. Any other comments?
Yeah, I would just say that absolutely, Mr. Rush, that we will take that into consideration.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your presentation. We're going to meet someone from Transdev.
Good evening. My name is Andre Marshall, and I'm the general manager for Transdev here locally. I'm going to spend the next 2 or 3 hours talking about Transdev and talking about. Before I start, I would like to say a couple of things about the extenders and from my perspective, because the operators do work directly for myself, Transdev, First Transit, and National Express, formerly known as Diamond Transportation. The obvious fix for the extender issue, and I'm not talking about having one versus two, is to make sure that the operator do a good feature before they leave the yard. I'm going to talk about customer service once I get deep into my little conversation with you, and that is basically the base of what customer service is to have what you need to make sure you're taking care of people you're supposed to be taking care of. So if you're on one of our vehicles and we're not able to transport you or to keep you safe, then we fail at what we're supposed to be doing. So from my perspective, I vow to make sure that my operators have what they need before they come to pick you up, and that'll fix that problem for us. Okay. Now I'll transition into my 2 hours. Just want to talk about Transdev real quick. Obviously, I think we all know that the service is ran. The vehicles are operated by the three operators I just mentioned, and we also partner with MV Transportation and MTM, and obviously the staff of Metro Access to make sure that you get what you need. To talk a little bit about Transdev. Transdev is a global company based out of France. Home offices in Paris, and the North American offices are located in Chicago. We operate in U.S. and Canada. Transdev has been in business for over 100 years and operate in 20 different countries and 5 continents. We're a strong track record of improving safety in the transportation industry, not just in paratransit, but also in rail, streetcar, we operate 200 contracts and compete. And I took transport over 400 million passengers in North America alone annually. So we do a lot of work in this industry, in this business, and we're always looking at and trying to diversify and make things better for our customers. The contracts that we operate here in the U.S. Is across about 40 large cities in the U.S. Some of the major ones that we operate are in Baltimore, obviously here in D.C. with the Metro Access contract. We're in Las Vegas, New Orleans, Long Island, and also in Greensboro. What Transdev has vowed to provide for Metro Access is basically at the main thing that we obviously look at is safety. So we vow to provide uncompromising safety, excellent operational performance, and I'll field those questions after, because obviously we're not there at this current moment, but we'll work back to where we were. We have rigorous fleet management systems. Superior customer experience is what we aim for. And high performance in the culture and quality and value that we provide to our customers. Our local operation consists of the top four folks in our leadership team has over 80 years of paratransit experience. I'm not talking just transportation, I'm talking about paratransit experience. I have a couple of them here with me. Ms. Arlette with me, please stand and raise your hand so everybody can see. She's a little short, so I'm not sure if she's standing. She's our Director of Operations. And Mr. Al Post is our Director of Maintenance. Our safety manager is Ms. Julie Peel. She's not currently with us. She's taking some well-deserved vacation time. Mr. Folks has 37 years of maintenance experience in this industry. Ms. Whitley has over 30 years of experience, and she has experience, she is driven and has been several managers in several properties, so a lot of experience in the team that we, that Transdev has brought to us to help support the system. Our leadership team also includes four operation managers, another safety manager, which I mentioned this week, he is the safety director. So we have safety manager, we have safety manager, we have maintenance managers, HR and payroll managers. So we have a pretty robust staff, basically above and beyond what contract dictates that we should have. Transdev joined the Metro Access team back in May of 2013. We operate approximately 50% of the service and average over 330, run about 330 routes daily. So they will have 50% of coverage. We also have the taxi subcontractors operating under us. So any issues you may have with our taxes or any compliments you want to pass on about them, they'll come up with us. Our staff includes upwards of 527 operators right now. We're still actively looking to get more. We have 44 maintenance staff, 55 safety training staff, and about another 30 operational and support personnel that help to monitor the vehicles on the road and dispatch and other administrative work that needs to be done to keep the contract moving along. Our local facility is located in Hydesville. We have a 93,000 square foot building. It's located on 7.5 acres property. Houses 313 revenue vehicles and 23 non-revenue vehicles. One of the great things about this property is that in wintertime when we have inclement weather, we can put about 80% of the facility, and it affords us a lot of flexibility when it comes to cleaning snow and ice and all those things to make sure that when we do have a limit, whether that vehicles are ready to go out first thing in the morning, and we don't have to clean snow off them and move them and move snow and all that. So it makes it a lot easier for us to take care of our customers. Facility obviously operates 24/7, so even when the buses are not on the road, we're there. Maintenance is there, pre-trips and repairing vehicles are on the clock, so the building never shuts down. All our mechanics are ASE certified. We have over 72 certifications amongst the mechanics that we have in the shop. Facility is Blue Seal, recognized as a Blue Seal of Excellence, and I'll field those questions after if we're not sure what anyone doesn't know what ASE is or Blue Seal of Excellence. Ms. Al Folks is ready to answer questions about that whenever I'm confident. All safety and training staff are provided not just initial training in how to conduct classrooms and how to train people on and off the buses, but they also receive annual refresher training to make sure that the level of knowledge that they pass to the drivers remains constant or is constantly rising. And not to mention, obviously. New operator training that we provide, that the training staff provide, is includes 40 hours of classroom training, 40 hours of skills training, and the skills and BTW meaning behind the wheel training, where the operator is in the vehicle and there's a person on the vehicle with them to teach and monitor and make sure that they're ready to transition to the next phase, which is the cadetting phase. And they'll get another 40 hours of cadetting phase before we graduate them into regular service and let them transport passengers by themselves. These operators are also required to complete annual refresher training, and they get those refresher training either in a classroom session or in safety meetings that we have monthly. Everybody's required to go through these safety meetings. The safety meeting topics basically the same topics that they're taught when they go through classroom sessions. So those will be randomly selected throughout the year. If we're going through a period where we're having trends for, let's say, passengers falling or side swipes, then we'll change the pre-designated topic for that month and then shift to the ones that are impacting us at the time. Part of the safety team are road supervisors. And I think we just spoke about road supervisors earlier, and most of you have met our road supervisors here at this building and throughout the system. Our road supervisors are a critical part of the safety culture that we try to maintain at Transit and obviously at Metro Access. Our road supervisors conduct up to between 400 and 500 observations monthly. And those observations are the door-to-door observations, or they'll do trail checks, where they'll actually be in the vehicle and they'll follow the operator and just kind of take note of how they're driving and catch up with them after, or they'll stop them if they're seeing something really erratic. And provide feedback and make sure that the operator understands what he's supposed, he or she is supposed to do and how it's supposed to be done, and make sure things get done in a safe manner. And when we talk about safety and all the things we need operators to do, and there's never enough that we can do for them as well. So we try to, at Transit, we try to institute as many morale and incentive programs as we can to not only show the operator that we care about them and that and that we know they are valued to us, but also to get them to understand that without them, nothing happens. So obviously they get their paycheck every 2 weeks, and we shake their hands and thank them for what they do whenever we see them. But we also like to do things for them and their families. So what we try to, what we do is twice a year we do family events for our operators where we'll get catered food to come in, and we'll have prizes, door prizes, and toys, and coloring books and things like that for the children to try to build a family atmosphere down at the facility. Currently, we have what we call the Safety Olympics going on, and this is an initiative that we have to engage the operators in basically communicating with each other to try to change not just the safety culture, but also the attendance and customer service issues that we may encounter now and then. So, and the way that works is there'll be 20 to 30 operators per team. And these operators, when they achieve goals, and one of the goals is to report to work on time and not have any missed days for, let's say, a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. When they achieve that goal, then the whole team gets a reward. When they achieve the other goal, whether it be no accidents or incidents for a certain time frame, then the value or the level of that gift increases. And same thing for customer service. If they have no customer service complaints, or if they have commendations, that's a plus. And we use that as well to increase the level of gratitude that we show them. And what it also does is we have about 20 different teams, 20 individual teams. They all have unique names. So now the teams are competing against each other to see who can do the best. And that's what we're trying to do, is to get them to, because we have a pretty large organization there with 500 plus operators and another 200 to 300 staff. So it's sometimes difficult to get them all together. It's actually impossible to get them all together at the same time because of the level of service that we provide. But at least we'll break them down into smaller groups. These little groups can get together and they can do team building events together. They've been encouraged to plan things, whether it be bowling tournaments or whatever they want to do, and come back and bring me the receipt and I'll take care of it for them. Just to get them to start thinking more on the team effort, doing things as a team, and build that camaraderie, which will eventually help us all and make sure that they're doing what they need to do.
Excuse me, but you seem to be having the same problems over and over and over again, and I'm wondering how you can, what you can do about this, about the drivers, and about the things that are going on. Yes.
Excuse me, ma'am, do you need to get your name on the list?
Other things that we do for our operators, we provide free shuttle for them to and from the metro stations. We're currently exploring subsidizing daycare for a subset of our employees, and we provide vouchers at Thanksgiving, Christmas time for turkey or ham, or the one used for you use at any grocery store to get food items for their holiday meals. So those are basically the things that we try to do with and for our operators. And I guess the key that I want to get across the members of the committee and public that's here is that Transdev truly wants to and is a value partner with the Metro Access team. We want to make sure that the service that's provided is the world class, basically. We aim for nothing short. We don't live in a kind of sea or fishbowl or something where we don't realize what's going on. We realize we're having challenges right now. But I also need everyone to understand that we're not resting on our laurels. We are not asleep at the wheel. We are constantly putting our heads together to try to find solutions when issues arise, and that we're committed to getting nothing but premier customer service for the customer that we serve. I'm going to leave that. I actually had a few more, but I'm going to pause right there and just kind of open it up and answer any questions the committee or anyone who may have.
We're going to go around the table.
Sorry, you already heard your. Just wanted to get a clarification on Mr. Marshall. There's a statement I just want to kind of clarification. They're both supervisor operations there, and you mentioned as being, those are things that are handled on a weekly basis, right? I think you mentioned 400. You said one. Yeah,
this is Mr. Marshall again. I just want to make sure that Edward is actually one of my heroes, and he does a very good job of keeping me straight. Yes, and we do that many weekly. So it's April. There's also a number of guys, so if you do the math, and you'll see that we do over 2,000 a month. Thank you, Ms. April.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Committee, does anyone have questions that they would like to ask him?
Yes.
Charlie?
Me too.
I am Jeff. My primary view of any service provider with regards to their workforce is that the workers, and I value workers, so I'm not talking about workers or workers, but they're real people. Workers need to understand what they're hired to do and given the opportunity to do what they're hired to do and monitor to ensure that they do what they're hired to do. And ultimately, when there's a problem, they're given assistance either in terms of equipment or personnel assistance or whatever to get them up to speed when there's a problem. And the bottom line is there's got to be some acceptable level of error, and that ultimately, when a person has a problem, you work with them to fix that problem, and then within a reasonable period of time, they demonstrate that their ability to do the job is fine, and they're doing it, and everything's copacetic. And the one thing that I consistently am not sure of the answer to, and I don't say this to you in particular, but to any provider, is how do you gauge when a person needs to receive some level of discipline, and then how is that discipline carried out so that the person ultimately benefits from it? And finally, if the person can't benefit from it, then we sure as hell are not going to be the victims of it. So what happens to that?
Thank you, sir, for that question. I guess I should have said up front that I've served 29 years in the United States Air Force, and that when it comes to discipline, and actually not just discipline, but any aspect of any business. As a military guy, I want to see the black and white. So we have our policies, we have our procedures, we have our directives, and this is what we follow, right? That tells me when it's time to take action on Conrad if Conrad does something wrong. Now, I'm going to take action. Now, am I going to terminate him, or am I going to retrain him, or am I going to have a conversation with him and find out that there's something wrong with this policy and we need to change the policy? Those are the things that we do. Everything that the operators or are required to do while they're out there is in black and white. And when they violate those policies, the policy tells you what you're supposed to do in most instances, and that's what we'll do. So if I have an operator that's driving down the road on his cell phone, I'm going to terminate that operator because that's against most state laws. It's against our policy. So that operator has to go and find work somewhere else. If the operator makes a mistake that's not covered in the policy or it's something that we have some flexibility on, obviously, yeah, we'll bring him in and we'll retrain him and make sure he or she is good to go before we put them back on the road. So we don't want to lose operators. So we're always looking for a reason to keep good operators. But if they're showing indications that they're not going to take care of you when they pick you up and have you on their vehicle, I don't need that person because I don't need you to get hurt. So we're going to let them go. And the ones that show that they can be retrained and put back into service, we'll definitely do that. I mean, how we do that on a regular basis. I hope that covers both questions that you asked.
Good.
Would you like me to answer to the operations control center? But really where it starts for us, it starts in training when you're hiring people. And what we like to tell people is we hire for attitude and we train for aptitude. Someone has to have the right attitude to begin the training course with us. And typically we have about a 35-40% graduation rate because we find that a lot of people might demonstrate a great attitude during the interview. We see their best performance ever. And then we start to see their actual personality develop over the first several days. And if someone doesn't have the right customer service attitude, and you can't do it in the classroom, you're not going to be good with our customers. So we don't keep a lot of people. We find that a lot of people don't have the right attitude when it comes to just showing up to work. They show up to work the first day on time, then the next day they want to be 5-10 minutes late, and they'll have the attitude, well, it's not a big deal. And we often tell them, we have a song that we sing, an old Ray Charles song, which is Did the Road Check. And we use that on purpose in the classroom because it reinforces with people here are the standards that we have. If you're going to be late on the second day or the third day, your attendance is going to get worse over time, and it means you're not taking the training seriously with us. Once we get someone onto the floor, we've trained them, we constantly work to develop them. We realize that after we finish training, and our reservations course is about a week long, and they'll be training more on the floor, on the job training. Dispatch is 3 weeks long with on the job training as well. You might not necessarily be ready for prime time, kind of like the old Saturday Night Live, but you have to be ready for the service levels. And as we work with people and try to develop them, we try to make sure that people do have the skill set. So after they demonstrate it in the training, they work hand in hand with the supervisor, with another agent, to try to build up the speed, the accuracy, the caring and understanding that they really need for it. But we're constantly judging and trying to evaluate our employees. Once you coach someone, you're constantly trying to evaluate, is this someone that I can keep coaching, keep mentoring, and will they be able to grow with us? We find that within 90 days, we do lose several people because they might not have the skills and aptitude. They were good enough for the classroom, but under pressure, they might not have what we really need to help do the job. Usually, once a person passes 90 days, it's mainly an attitude. Someone has to keep demonstrating a proper attitude to continue with us. We do a lot of coaching. We do a lot of reminders for our staff. We unfortunately also have to do a lot of discipline when people don't want to do the job. On the plus side, we do have a lot of departments, though, that have demonstrated a great sense of importance. They understand what the importance of their job is, and they're striving really hard. And on the opposite end of the scale from discipline, we've had entire departments that we've rewarded because we felt they've done a good job. They've
tried to do the best they can and have come up with ideas. So we'll either take them out to lunch, or in the case of our quality assurance department, because they have been keeping up with our complaints and providing good feedback to us, they demanded a lunch at Outback Steakhouse. So we'll do things like that to keep people motivated. And we've much tried to do the motivation, but our team also understands if you don't do the job, we do have to coach, counsel, and discipline.
Good.
Yeah. I have a couple of questions for you, Mr. Marshall. First of all, good presentation. I didn't fall asleep during this. Not 2 hours. Anyway, it's a French company, am I correct?
Yes, correct.
So you're like a BMW in the United States.
Well, I mean, that's a good thing, yes.
Yeah, okay. And the BMW is a very good car.
Well, yes, that's it.
But my second question is that you are involved with Metro Access as a subcontractor to provide service to the Metro Access.
It's a prime contractor. They're it's direct. It's not a subcontractor.
So direct contractor.
Direct. Yes, they're a prime contractor. The largest.
So you're the prime contractor. You're the largest one.
Yes.
Okay. And you provide both Metro Access buses and taxis.
The taxis are subcontracted by us. Yes.
Okay, it's both of
them. Yeah. 5% of the service.
No. This is where my question is coming up here. Since you provide service to Metro Access, and Metro Access does receive some federal government grant, so Metro Access has to follow a law which does not exist in France, from my knowledge, ADA, American Disability Act. Do you get any understanding on ADA or training, or you talk to people with the Metro Access about the ADA office, and do you give training to your staff, the ADA requirement, is that necessary to provide the customers the services of Metro Access to your transit vehicles? And my last question, how many vehicles you have accessible with a ramp on it for wheelchair users? Are they all of them? What you said, 500? Something you have figured to give us?
About 5% of the taxes provides 5% of the service. We have 313 Metro Access vehicles. Metro Access vehicles.
You use the Metro Access?
Yes.
So you all use Metro Access?
Yes.
Okay. So with the ADA thing, could you answer that?
I would love to.
Yeah. Go ahead. Thank you.
We are a French company, but I don't speak French. So the people that I brought in and the four managers that I discussed that have the 80 years of experience in paratransit, we're talking Americans and people that has deep knowledge of ADA. So the French, they're not in the room. They come with wheelbarrows to deliver money for me to spend on Metro Access. So they come to get the money, and they don't run the operation. We run the operation here in North America, and they just basically give us what we need to make sure it happens. So everybody that you'll see on the vehicles that you'll ride in, they are ADA compliant, and everybody understands how ADA operates in the United States of America.
The reason I asked that question is because I used to be the board of director of a company that was headquartered in Lyon, Paris, not close to Paris, Lyon, France. And they had office in the USA. Of course, USA had all US staff and working the handicapped, like HI, it's very big worldwide. However, they had to follow the French companies, the rules and regulations, the policies, the requirements, that's what I have.
No, definitely. Yeah, here and in Canada, we follow Canadian rules, and here we follow the U.S. rules.
Are Metro Access people happy with that, Mr. Gregg? Are you happy with that?
Actually, out there with a French company?
No, yes.
Mr.
Manager, let me answer that question. Just so you know, just for clarification, Transdev, First Transit, MV, Transportation, and National Express, now formerly Diamond, they're all required to follow the Metro Access contract. As you know, the Metro access contract is written to meet or exceed ADA requirements. And strictly by that, it's governed by that process. All the requirements he talked about, adherence and everything, those are written. They have to respond to terms of the contract. That's strictly. So, as you know, we have many subject matter experts in the contract. All the companies we've chosen for the contract are subject matter experts, but they abide by our contract, and that's written by ADA policy. And that's why we're here in oversight, to make sure they abide by the terms. It's not the company's terms, it's our terms. And that's
for that. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, I just want to add, you said you operate throughout Europe, and I'm just curious, what rules apply in Europe that ADA doesn't apply?
I unfortunately did not answer that question for you. Because I haven't been.
I'm just curious.
No, I haven't, or nobody from our staff here has worked in any of the four countries. We strictly know the North American and American visa system.
My last question. Are you bidding on everybody right with the World Contracts? Is there one of the contractors that you consider for this? I'm just curious. Mr. Blake is here?
Yeah, he's here.
Are you one of the candidates? I'm just curious, that's all.
I'm not sure whether our company bid on that or not, but I know we look at everything, so, especially in this region. But I couldn't tell you what we were.
Anyone
else have any questions? I got a compliment.
Yeah.
I think that all of
ours. One of the men, please.
I think that all of our contractors are working hard to do the best that they can do. But I sometimes feel we spend a lot of time complaining and not working with them. I have a problem with that because we have oversight. My problem is that if you treat a person right, the person will treat you. If you get on a vehicle and you nasty to a driver, or you nasty to someone that you call on the phone with a complaint, they don't treat you the same way you treat them. So it's a partnership. We got to get that in our head. We got to work together, all of us. We cannot burn any bridges. About 3 months ago, I was driving, and I had to come back to Metro Access and ride. It's the best thing going. I wouldn't be able to move around without my train, and the drivers, and the executive staff. So we all got to work together and stop throwing mud at each other. We've been sitting in this committee for a while, some of us. We know how this thing works. We need to go back to our jurisdiction and explain it out. Metrolactic not going to be on time every day. It can't be, because it's good and people want to ride. And people get aboard. I think that we need to stop and think about some of our complaints. I think we ought to stop and think about some of the calls we make, because they're really working hard and give us quality. I asked one question to one of the executives from London. And you know what he said to me? I said, why does everybody come over here from overseas and want to run a tax case call? You know what he said to me? Your government pays for it. I can't go to London and Paris. I can't go up to the Vatican. I can't move around y'all. I have to stay here. We need to stop fighting each other and complaining senseless. You think company who come here and don't want to keep employees. That's all I have.
Does anyone else have any questions? I have a statement and a question. One question. What is your on-time performance? That's one question. And we're having a high turnover of drivers. What can the public, your company, WMATA do to try to keep the drivers? Because if we keep experienced drivers, we would have less problems. They would know the areas, they would know Montgomery County and Virginia if we kept experienced drivers. What do we have any suggestions on what we can do on how to keep experienced drivers? The turnover of drivers, you know, is a big concern. And I have to agree with Ms. Bellamy. I've been riding 18 years, so I started with a district here. We didn't have, we just had sedans. We didn't have Where's My Ride. We didn't have a GPS system. We didn't have half of what we have now. So the old timers know how far we've come. People who've only been on the system 1 or 2 years don't know what we started with. We didn't have door to door. We didn't know if our ride was coming. We didn't have Where's My Ride. We couldn't call anybody. You either were picked up, you were left at the wrong address. Anything could happen. We've just come a long way. Now the new people, they want everything to be on time. They don't want to be late. They did it by appointment. Whatever it is, the bottom line is we do all need each other. We are all connected. If Metro Access shut down for 1 week, what would you do? How would I get to work? How would you get to the doctors? How would you get to Walmart, Kmart, Costco, the party,
church,
wherever? We do need to learn to work together. No, we don't have to accept anything coming down the road, but we're all connected. We all need each other. The client needs the driver. The driver needs dispatch. We need all need each other. Maintenance, we're all connected. And we've got to figure out how to make it work. Because 1 week without Metro Access, all of us who are handicapped and really depend on the service will be lost.
This is Conrad again. To address the drivers and what we can do to not just retain the drivers, but to recruit more drivers to assist us in what we're trying to do here. Recruiting, we just finished a two-hour meeting just prior to this one talking about just those topics. Ways to get drivers in, ways to increase the number, and the ways to keep the ones that we have, and to make sure that the service is performing at the level that we need to perform. Some of the things we talked about, obviously, is wages, and we'll address that soon. Hopefully, we're currently in negotiations. We're trying to step in ways in negotiations with our drivers union, and that's also that that's the only thing that we need to do to attract and to keep drivers. And that's why we're trying some of the issues that are some of the initiatives that I discussed earlier. We have probably over 50% of our workforce are single moms and dads that need assistance, not necessarily in dollar form, but possibly in daycares where if daycare provider drops out on them and last notice they don't have someplace to take their child, we're trying to contract with a place close to our location where they can drop the child off. And obviously this would be a place that would be vetted by them before any action is taken by them to make sure that they're comfortable with those folks. We're looking at the other initiatives that we can do to show appreciation, because you can throw money at any problem, but most times it doesn't solve the problem. We're communicating with the operators, trying to find out exactly what they want, what they value, and trying to find ways to provide the things that are valuable to them to try to retain. Because, I mean, we wouldn't be where we are now if it wasn't, if we didn't have a retention problem. And operators aren't leaving solely because we're terminating them for cost. Some are leaving because they're frustrated or they're tired, or and when I say tired, I mean tired of me telling them what to do every day. So we obviously have to try to find a way to fix how we communicate with them, what we communicate to them, and how they feel about waking up and coming to work for Conrad or for Transit or with Metro Access. And those are some of the things we're looking at. Obviously, we're going to be meeting, we already meet weekly within Transit. So now we're looking at, and I meet with my other brothers at the First Transit, brothers and sisters at First Transit, and Diamond or National Express to talk about these issues and the things that they're hearing from their operators, so that we can put all the thoughts, all the information that we're getting from the two different providers together, and see if there are common threads that's there that we can pull on and say, okay, if we work on this, then we're going to get a positive reaction from the operator. So it's not easy getting them to tell you exactly what's going on. You have to sit with an operator for a while and talk to them. They'll complain about this and this and this and this. But once you get to know them and you speak with them and you listen to them, you can, most times, or at least I can get to the root cause of why this operator is not happy. And I can try to do something about it. It's obviously difficult to do when you have a 600-person workforce. But with help from the other providers and some of my supervisors that we're getting engaged in this, we'll figure it out. And obviously this isn't something that just happened today. It's something that's been developing over years. So it's probably going to take us a few months to figure it out and to get it pointed in the right direction. But again, we are not resting. We are trying to find ways, because it costs me a lot of money to go find a new operator and put them behind the wheel. It's a lot cheaper for me to keep the ones that I have. So obviously we're spending a lot of time trying to figure out what's going on with them. And if there's a solution in this room and around this table, I'm begging you to give it to me. Because I know we all want this thing to be going in the same direction. We all want the same thing. So I'm open for suggestions. All of my brothers and sisters on the other providers are open for suggestions, and we're easy to find. So if you have them, we'll definitely take them. As for the OTP, I'm not going to give you a number, because we all know it's terrible right now. But just understand that we know it's terrible. You do too. And we're working on fixing it. And a big part of that is this operator driver's discussion that I just had. So as we fix that, we'll fix the OTP, and we'll start getting you back to your warranty a little bit sooner than we have been recently.
I went through eligibility 18 years ago, so I don't know what's going on in eligibility now, but the thought process for getting customers to understand what the service, their expectations of the service, maybe needs to be clearer, that it is public transportation. It's not your personal limo. The understanding of what the expectations of the service, maybe we need to start there, because a lot of clients really get on the bus. I've watched them, and they have an attitude. They get to the door, and the driver is late. The driver does not want to pick you up late. He doesn't want to. He's following his manifest. He's following the traffic, the weather, and his manifest. And they attack the driver sometimes. Then you've upset the driver, and you want him to drive you somewhere. Really? Really? So I think it needs to start with what the expectations of the clients, their understanding. Now, yes, there are some cases that are definitely need to be reported. We're not saying that, but we're saying that the general attitude of the new customers or the clients in general, it's a little off. And we got to get it back on. So all of us have areas of improvement. That's the clients, the drivers, dispatchers, road crews, all of it. We all need to kind of have an attitude change. Sit down and think about it.
Misinformation. Yeah. There's a lot of misinformation about Metrolinx. There's a lot of misinformation about our needs. This is not a bright session. This is a session to make things better for everyone. We can't keep going on with it. I started off Metro Access when you were making drive-throughs years ago. You were lucky if you got on the bus. You were lucky if you didn't ride for 3 hours. And you were lucky to sit down straight on the bus. We've come a long way. In fact, much farther. Because the better off Metro Access is, the more people are out. More people complain about any little thing. I am tired of hearing people complain all the time about a service that we got. I don't never hear anybody come here and say, you know what, I had an excellent ride yesterday. The driver took something and made the best of it. All we ever hear are people coming in here, and some people sitting here just say, complain about their ride. I don't believe in complaining. I believe we got to stop some of the needless complaining so that people can have a chance to do the right thing. If all we're gonna do is come in and complain every other month, the driver didn't do that. Well, there are more people that are riding in. When I started off, there wasn't as many people riding in. And I know which was for you. You were in the beginning. They got so many people pick up now. And they spread out so far, everybody comes down here with a list of complaints. Have you told any one of these people sitting at the table from the mob. Thank you. Thank you. Or anybody from customer service, have you said, thank you. Thank you for hearing my complaint. I just learned something about 3 months ago. I was riding the bus. I couldn't understand why everybody got off the bus on the metro, on the Georgia Avenue line, saying thank you to the driver. Then one day, I asked the driver, who was an ex-metro access driver, I seen this lady get on the bus, and she looks at you and she tells you thank you. He had to tell me what she was saying, thank you. I've never heard anybody say thank you to a metro access driver the way they should. Thank you for giving me a good ride. Thank you for listening to my complaint. When are we going to say thank you? I mean, something that we were given, but when will we acknowledge the staff that worked for us? When we stop being demanding? It's a good ride. That's why folks come late. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming here and putting up with foolishness sometimes on Mondays. Thank you for not saying nothing back. You never defend yourself. You take whatever customer throw at you. They want, like Ms. Russ had said 100 times, they want limousine service and gripe about the cost of that. I'm not right because you give me independence. I can't drive right now. I can't get nowhere. I can't even get to the store around the corner from where I live because they're working on the walkway. It's too cold for me.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Out of here. Yes, sorry.
Way too long.
We have a problem.
Yeah, I just
want
to say.
I'm sorry.
Hold on.
Who are you hollering at?
Wait,
you're not talking. Where are your horse?
I interrupted you, Charlie, so I need to say it. All right.
Let's bring the meeting back to order here. All right, so.
I was attempting to make a point.
All right, make a point, and then we're going to close this discussion and move on to the business item.
I fully agree with the senators that have been offered over the last 20 minutes or so. But I also want to say that there's a balance that has to be maintained, and it is not acceptable to be denied service that doesn't smell like a damn perfume. It is not acceptable to have to ride in a van that has no air conditioning in the middle of July, and your damn guide dog is about to die because you haven't got enough air. It's just not acceptable. And all the talk about how we need to be grateful, yes, we do. But we also need to have our own integrity. And that means we expect and have a right to be treated appropriately. Everybody does. And with that, I hope you can move the conversation to a different topic.
All right, Patrick, go ahead.
Okay, I first want to apologize for being late. I've gone before the board of directors the last couple of months, and one of the things, and I guess I need education from this committee, talking about the numbers that I hear as far as on-time performance in terms of metro access. I understand, Paul, correct me anybody if I'm wrong, that the on-time performance numbers are now at 83%. Am I correct or wrong?
No, I think that's
okay. So, and if this has been addressed, then I apologize. But I think as far as the on-time performance goes, I think that's one of the things that we need to improve on. And I think that's fine. I understand, Carolyn, where you're coming from. Thank you, sir, very important. And I also understand that on-time performance is very cool, too. Paul, has this been addressed? We talked about the numbers.
Oh, we talked about it last month. So,
okay. And do we have?
I know it's going to be a long discussion.
Right. Do we have a plan going forward to increase the to improve those numbers?
I think Ms. Davis is going to speak today because we start that conversation.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, but we need to tie up because we're getting close to 4:30.
Just an on-time performance. I've seen the change in 10% minus compared to September 2015 versus September 2016. Am I correct?
Yes. Over the last two months, we've been
Yes. Over the last 2 months, we've been just above, a little bit above 80%, but that's the last 2 months. Calendar year to date, we're right around 90%. But yes, it's been in the last 2 months that we've noticed the very noticeable dip, yes. And that's been addressed, yes.
So do we have a root cause for why that's happening?
Yes, and this has been shared with members of large. There is a driver shortage issue. That's a macro issue that's going on, that's ongoing. And Ms. Marshall just shared about that today. This is across the board. This is with First Transit, National Express, across the board, that there is a driver shortage. So generally in the DC area, actually.
Right, so do we know why there's a driver shortage? Mm-hmm. Now we come back down to why there's a driver shortage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Conrad Marshall. I'm general manager at Transit. This driver shortage isn't just isolated to the DC area. This is a national issue for Transit, and I'm sure for the other providers. Main reason for that, obviously, is the economy. There are other more lucrative opportunities out there for folks that wouldn't typically apply to be a driver.
So the fact that there are more lucrative opportunities, doesn't that suggest something to you regarding pay and performance? I mean, I would imagine that 80% with on-time performance, the certain liabilities that the companies are getting hit with because they haven't hit their on-time performance. Am I correct?
You are definitely correct.
Okay, so wouldn't that suggest to you that a remedy might be financially viable? Like maybe meeting the pay and performance standards of your competition?
That does make sense. And that is actually something that we're looking at.
Okay, that would be great. I mean, I know this committee has been on record as suggesting that in the past, and I've also heard the saying is that there are more lucrative opportunities outside of Metro Access that are less stressful and pay better. Mm-hmm. So the question is going to be, I don't like to go before the board of directors with an 80% on-time performance when I know that we've been at 92, 93, 94. And so I think this is a critical issue that we need to address. I hear the same things, Charlie, that you hear on the complaint side, but I think the root cause of this is that you've got better opportunities out there, and I think it is behooves the providers to come up with a way to compete, or that 8% is going to go down to 70 and 60. That's not good. So, Paul, I don't know if you got hit with this, but I certainly have, and I have read some of the emails to Mr. Crawford, and I certainly know he has, because he's been on the CC line when I've been on the 2 line. So, could you come up with a plan in the next 30 or 60 days for bringing this back up to 90,
94, 95%? Now, Patrick, the only thing we need to consider is as we get into weather here, that's going to have a back on.
I understand, but I think this
reminds this also, you know.
And I understand weather, Paul, but I'm seeing a trend of we're down to 90, from 93, 90% down to 80%, and I don't see anything in the offering that's keeping us from going to 70 and 60%. So I think that it deserves some thinking and a plan going forward to say, how can we improve those numbers? I don't have any answers.
Well, Patrick, we have said many times that we want minimal drivers, but they're paying Volkswagen wages.
Well,
how many times have I said that?
That, yes, and Denise, that's exactly what I'm not saying, but that is exactly what I'm referring
to.
That's
what it is.
I need on-time performance, and the on-time performance is not there, and the companies are taking a hit. I would say the companies need to do what is important, and if the answer to that is better wages and better, then they have to do it, or we're going to have to replace the service that's out there. We have, I mean, we have an on-time performance that we have to meet.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair Hall, go ahead. I'm done.
All right. So I think Mr. Kent has a response and then we'll try to close this out.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I apologize for being late myself today, but I did hear the discussion about on-time performance. And obviously, we all know that Metro Access has an on-time minimum standard of 92%, which we have not met recently. And, you know, as a matter of fact, it's almost never happened in the last 10, 11 years since I've been here that we've not been able, by the end of the month, to have an average of at least 91, if not 92%. This is rare. And it is a result of the fact that there's some competition out there about the people who drive for Metro Access. And the committee is justified in being concerned. If there's a drop in performance, the customers aren't getting the service they're supposed to get, obviously you have a right to be concerned. It's my job and the job of the Metro Access team to ensure compliance with the contract. But, you know, one of the things I want to share with you is that, you know, years ago, when Metro hired me, one of the things that we talked about in my interview is the fact that I've been a contractor myself, and that there is a certain art in the way that Metro manages the contractors. There are times that the contractors make mistakes and we have to work with them to see that they're corrected. But there are other times that there are things that happen that can be overwhelming to the contractors, where the proper role of Metro and by extension this advisory committee is to try to help collaborate with the contractor to improve the performance. One of the things that's happened nationally, not just here in the DC region, is that some of our industries have been disrupted by the invention of new technologies and new players coming into the market. And I know I see Ms. Case here this evening. She knows about what's happened with the taxi industry. Because we've had new entrants to the market. We used to be able to turn to the taxis as a place to go when Metro Access carriers were basically filled to capacity. Now the taxi companies are fewer in number. We don't have as many of them to turn to. Fortunately, the Transport DC program is giving the DC-based taxi companies some extra work to keep them thriving. But the fact is the region does not have a uniform supply of taxi providers or other providers to help perform this kind of service. And in the meantime, these transportation network companies are asking us to rethink who really can come pick us up. What should they, you know, who do they have to be to come and provide this type of service? So we put the abilities ride RFP out. And that's one way basically to say Metro does not want to change the standard for of operation and quality for Metro Access, but we don't want that to stand in the way of customers having other choices. And we're doing that for a reason, because we see the ridership growing, we see a drop in the number of companies that we've been able to turn to provide this type of service, and we have to get more creative about it. So, you know, I can only tell you that my team, Mr. June and his team, and I personally have met with executives from all three of the service delivery contractors, and we talk about performance all the time. They are not sitting on their hands. They are doing many things to try to improve the service, but the time it takes to hire someone, to train them to provide the service and bring them in, it's not 5 minutes. It takes time to bring someone in. In the meantime, we have had, on-time performance drop, but I can assure you that we don't intend to just leave it this way. But it is something that, you know, when the industry changes this way, where people, the same people that we've hired over the years to work as Metro Access contractors, a lot of the drivers have other options, other places that they can go to work. And so, you know, I know Ms. Rush has mentioned this before, you know, that there are concerns about, well, you know, are the drivers being, you know, given competitive packages? Are they given, you know, a reason to come and work for these companies? Trust me, the contractors have thought of that. The contractors have been in negotiations with their unions. Some of them have made changes to their wages. They're starting to do what they can. But none of these things are a guarantee that people are just going to necessarily flock to their door. But they are making improvements to try to make the environment better for their operators. And Metro applauds this. And you may ask, well, you know, is Metro going to help with this? Well, we're helping where we can. We have contracts and relationships with these companies, and as we talk with them one at a time about the things that they propose to do, you know, they've told us and asked us at different times, you know, where they think that Metro can be of help, and where we feel that we can help, that's, you know, we would like to do so. But, you know, those are obviously between Metro and the contractors. Those are procurement discussions, so I can't share all of the details here. But what I can promise you is that any changes that we make, any new things or improvements that we make, we'll be glad to share with the committee once they start to be rolled out. So the best way that this committee can really help us right now is to really let us know in the usual way that you do. You know, it's one thing for us to be late. I'm going to tell you something. When we have an on-time performance problem, I'm going to tell you what my biggest worry is. I don't want the drivers to rush and become unsafe. If I have to choose between late and unsafe, I want them to be late. I want them to be safe at all costs until we're able to solve the on-time issue, which we are doing. We are working on this. But the most important thing those drivers do is they get our customers from one place to the other and back safely. And so that's the biggest thing that I really need you guys to help us with. If you observe anything that looks like unsafe behavior, that is the first priority for us. And if you see anything else that you think we can improve upon, let us know. But you know, these contractors are working very hard to try and address a level of demand for the service that's not going away. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Paul, just let me add one thing if I
may. Yeah, because so it is about almost 8:40.
I understand. I run over time or two. But no, let me say very quickly, Mr. Kent, I think the subcommittee and I know the full committee understands the problem, recognizes the issues, and wants to work with WMATA to come up with a equitable solution and be a partner in the solution, not just be an adversary as we've done in the past. So I think the cooperation of the subcommittee and the full committee is at your disposal, and the discussions and a solution to the problem is what we're interested in, and not finger pointing. Mm-hmm. And you know that.
Thank you.
All right,
we're going to close this subject, and at this time we'll go back to new business, but I'll give the public comment period. So the first person on the list is going to be Sybil, if I'm saying Bogus, and you'll have 3 minutes. Some brings that individual to mic, please.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
So the new business that we're talking about.
Yeah, but I will, because of the time, I would like to get to the customers first and then come back to the business.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead. 3 minutes. No? Okay. The next person is Heidi Case. Get the mic.
Hello. sir, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name, but you had asked specifically, if anybody has solutions. And I certainly think paying reasonable wages, vacation, and sick leave are absolutely minimal to keep workers. You do not see this kind of retention problem with the bus driver. Who actually, in my opinion, and I think in many on the AEC's opinion, actually do less work than Metro Access drivers and are paid probably almost half what they are. And unfortunately,
But Metro's a part of that happening because, you know, they, when there's a bid, they pick the lowest, you know, they pick the lower bid, which pushes the prices down. But it's clearly, and I say from my own experience, I have a background in early childhood education and planned childcare and early, and you get, it's a similar kind of thing where, you know, they expect incredible work, very valuable and important work, and yet little pay and benefits. And I certainly think those things would make a difference. If you had someone, you know, yes, you're hired, by the way, here's how you apply for food stamps, because we know you're going to need it with what we pay you. And I have heard of that is a part of what new Metro Access drivers get. I think it is a very important job, but everybody has to be committed to paying them what they're worth. Absolutely. But I do think, you know, I have a lot of people that call me, and the late trips, chronicness of the late trips for people is really wearing on them. And, you know, late two meetings, and they're sit there, and they're late getting picked back up. I think, you know, that I really appreciate, Patrick, you sort of calling out for action. And I do think that if they're not at the negotiating table, as Mr. Kent says, I do think it is their role to call for action on behalf of the people that they are supporting and who use this service.
Thank you so much for your comments. Next person is Joseph Lockett.
Yes.
3 minutes from the person on the mic.
Good evening, everybody. I was about to get him a heart attack because I couldn't believe some of the things some people saying up here. I'm a born with Gregory Washington. At 13 years old, there at Walter Washington was my mentor. I worked 35 years with Ryan Byrd, Pat Kelly, and Anthony Wynn. And one of the first things he told us, always respect and get good customer service. And when somebody got a complaint, you listen to that complaint. You don't tell them, stop complaining, all of that. And I'm here because Metro's have been really good to me. And I've been going through a lot of changes off and on. But I had talked to a guy, I cannot pronounce the last name, but his first name is Dave. And I told him when I told him what was going on, he and his assistant Jackie took care of him. And once he took care of him, I called him once a week, thank you. And that following Friday, it just went down. I've been experiencing some of the most worst thing I've ever experienced in my life in the last couple of months, with the driver disrespect me. My problem is that I go over to pick up at 8:45 to 9:15, and I go in the kitchen here at Howard University. If I'm late, I got to sit out an hour. I missed my treatment. I can sit. So he took care of that, and they put it back at 8:30. The driver's still showing up at 9:15, 9:30, and then go pick somebody else up, and then drop them off first, and I'm late. I got to sit up. And the doctors are writing letters, so we put them, so we don't file them to y'all, but it's need to stop. I depend on y'all right now because my transportation is down, my nieces and everybody, they live in Fort Charles, my people are proper, so they can't come way up and do that. I depend on Metro SF. I'm in the neighborhood street cars back in 60. So we've been through it. Yes, we're thankful for what you get served us. But the problem is the dispatch is I'm getting a ride to go home. And you have a ride going somewhere else and he picked them up. And I'm going to tell you real quick, I ain't got too much time. They came late of how they first picked me up at 4:30. Go around front picking up a guy. I lived 25 minutes from how they first and the second guy to pick up took him on first. They took me all out there. Route 29, Howell County. And all that traffic rolling back home at 7:45. I mean, it's just so much to be done. I came down here, figured I'd be more time to get. All these complaints and dicks on me. I'll never do that. Okay, but I needed more time. I see I'm not going to get it because I'll give you a speak. But
sir,
I have some serious complaints.
Okay, I know you do, and staff is going to respond to them. And there's staff here that you can talk to, but I'm going to let staff again.
It might be good, Paul, because of medical issues, Officer Flag, the trips.
Okay.
That might be a solution you want to look at.
Absolutely. Okay. We'll be looking at that. And if you don't mind, sir, if I can talk to you after the meeting. My team has taken a look at a lot of your services recently. It has not been good, but I would like to take the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Thank you very much.
I just want to add, again, Mark Nash of Metro Access. Just first of all, I want to say that the things that you're saying, the problems that you've had, the complaints that you raised, definitely resonate with this group, resonate with our team. We understand that with the OTP, where it's been over the last couple of months, it's been a challenge for our customers. It's been a challenge for you. And I want you to know that the things that you're telling us are very important, things that we're looking at. We're going to take some time after the meeting to spend time with you to get some specifics on the issues that you've been facing, some specifics on some of those trips, and obviously take whatever steps you can under the circumstances to alleviate those things and prevent them from happening again to the extent that we can. Again, it's very challenging. We've been talking about some of those things in this meeting and previous meetings, and it's certainly not something that we take lightly.
Thank you for responding to that. Next on the list is Billy Armstrong. 3 minutes.
Well, I did so to all that, and this has been going on for over a couple of years, riding clients, especially sick clients around like 2 hours. And I do compliment the people I used to bring in the names in, and I've heard compliments about riders before. So I don't mind when they say no, but when you need to do something about bad service, they need you to ship them up or put them in training. I'd like to know, do you keep records on drop-off time performance? Because that would definitely be down. If you'd approve with drivers before, like they used to, when they called the clients, you would eliminate no-shows, especially for blind, when I remember the line people, I think it was about 30 of them in here that were left because no one walked to them to make sure they got on the bus. That would eliminate a lot. Drivers, it would eliminate drivers' contact with dispatchers, and supervisors where they are not answering the phones. So that's time lost. By the time you make contact, you already a no-show. The pickup confusion, that would eliminate that when you talk to the client. And the unsafe and dangerous, when these dispatchers are calling these clients, calling the drivers, while they're walking with a client that has a disability, because I almost fell one time in the ice, because the client, the driver is scared to death not to answer. They should not be allowed to do that unless the driver calls for their assistance. This way, it would help the driver, like today, the driver from Paul and I, he had to turn off the car, get out the van to answer the drive, which even made us more late. They shouldn't have to even answer. They wait and see the perform. We're moving. Because I heard that you can tell when the vans are moving. While they're driving, instead of looking on the computer, they're constantly calling, but yet they don't answer when you call. They don't answer when the driver's near. Last Monday, 2 hours late, I can't call this. Because different ones saying different things in their mind, they're around the corner there. 2 hours, you can drive backwards on the turbo and get back for 2 hours. Several dispatchers giving drivers instructions because there's no way on the program to let you know that there has already been made contact with a dispatcher. There should be a way that once a dispatcher makes contact with a driver, nobody else should be given the confusing information, and that would help eliminate. And I've had a fair change. I can't seem to get Jennifer Weber anymore. But the same day in the week, the same time, all these years I've been charged $4 and something, all of a sudden it went up to $6.50. So I always change my time because there's no way, just the exact time on the exact day in a different week that it's going to be sometimes like this. But I think that far as the problems, I'd like to know, because most of you all know I can talk to the drivers, I can talk to the clients, and I'm with clients. If we're picking up mail town, they're riding all the way uptown with me for what? When they should be on a van, going where they're going. They should not be touring the city, flying, going uptown. And it's unfair to anybody that when you're ready to go home, especially from any type of medical treatment, you should go straight home. You should not. You can get to Philadelphia in 2 hours. Nobody should ever be on a van. And I'm always going to speak up for them, say if I talk, they're going to get us, they might cut. You have people that's intimidated or afraid to call, and it shouldn't be that right. Thank you.
Thanks.
And it's like when there's good, I say it's good. When it's bad, I'm going to say it's bad.
Thank you so much for your comments and concerns. Who would like to address those?
I will certainly address some of those. First off, I want to thank you very much for your specific comments and recommendations on some of the steps that we can take. Those are very helpful in helping us to look at some of the things that we can do. I'm going to have Mr. Gray talk about the securities routing that you talked about and why people or customers are being taken what seems to be way out of their way for an extended period of time on the vehicle. Mr. Gray can talk to that. As far as the no-shows and some of the challenges that we face in terms of making contact with customers, there are times when circumstances prevent us from being able to perform door-to-door as we'd like to. It could be the distance from the vehicle. It could be some other obstructions. It could be safety issues. So while certainly we want to do that in every case, there are going to be times that we can't do that. But your suggestion is a good one, and we'll certainly take a look and see if there are areas that we can improve on. But there are times that I just want to make it clear where it just isn't workable. But again, thank you very much for the specifics, and I want to have Mr. Gray now speak to some of the routing issues that you mentioned.
Well, thank you. I'll turn to Casey at the same time as Arkansas. I know we've talked in the past several times. We have had some challenges with routing. That's quite right. We've had some challenges with the resources, but we do know in the afternoon some of the resources have become very tight, and some of those ride times have been very long. We are trying to work towards a better solution for that with what we have. In regards to the door-to-door, we were mentioning what dispatchers are calling the driver as the driver's trying to do door-to-door service. The dispatchers and what they're supposed to do is call only when they know the vehicle is stopped. Now, I realize this is not always the case. But in cases where the vehicle is stopped, the reason the dispatcher is calling the driver is because they have not hit the phone on the ranger, and the dispatcher has not been able to confirm have you actually arrived for your customer. So the only way to do that is to try to hold the driver on the radio. Well, that is their feedback. And that's very good feedback, and that's something I'll go over the dispatcher. But definitely with the ride time, I think there's a lot of work that we have to do there. Try to mitigate that, try to reduce that, starting with the driver. And we have about 5 or 6 other things too. And perhaps we can sit down next to this as well.
Thank you. Next is Frank Randolph.
One more quick item. You did mention something about your fare issues that you weren't able to contact Ms. Weber. I did see Ms. Weber make some notes, so maybe after this meeting or after.
It wasn't mainly about the fair, but that was one thing I'm going to have.
Okay.
So the exact time, then the middle of the week, campus changed once in a while to 650. I never said 650. It's not going to, but there's the.
Understood. Ms. Weber will be happy to spend some time talking about that.
All right. Thank you so much. Frank Bryant, someone bring the mic, please, 3 minutes.
Good evening, everybody. I missed a few meetings, well, quite a few actually, and I got my time mixed up and got here really late, but apparently I think I got here aside around comment period. One of the issues that I wanted to speak about is safety and cleanliness of vehicles. I know there are still a lot of old vehicles that are still around. I know that there have been situations when I've been on the vehicle, getting on the Beltway, and you can feel these vans moving from side to side. The alignment is horrible. Very dangerous, and the drivers have to pull these vans back into lane, into alignment, to keep them in the right lane. That has to be addressed. These vans are probably coming in and coming right back out at the end of each shift. So I don't know what the maintenance schedule is, whether it's being performed, how it's being monitored, what type of management controls are in place, but that has to improve. And I cannot believe that these old vans are still producing a more efficient means of travel. When you're talking about the cost incurred with fuel, the time is spent on the Beltway, the wear and tear, obviously these things are written down more often. Between November, the middle of November, to the beginning of December, I had three instances where the vans broke down. I was in Fort Washington to an appointment. Driver came one time, couldn't get the door open. Furious. Driver had to wait probably at a minimum of 2 hours before they even got somebody out there. Something longer than that. I had to wait for another ride. Another hour, maybe an hour and a half. Another instance, the driver drove up, picked me up to go to work. She had a flat tire. Didn't know it. My neighbor told me she had a flat tire. So I'm not sure how far the driver was driving with a flat tire before she was notified. In the last instance that happened around the beginning of December, the driver put the lift down for some reason. I don't know why. I don't use the lift. But she put the lift down, couldn't get it back up. Off the track or whatever. So eventually she had to manually do something to get the lift up. And I would suspect that a lot of these vehicles that are on the road are going to end up running into the same situation. And I would hate to see that a severe accident happen before actions are taken. You know what happened with the Metro rail system, that nothing happened until something tragic happened. Now all of a sudden, everybody wants to get on board and get things fixed. I don't want to see Metro access in this situation. I don't want to see anybody hurt.
Time is up, please. We'll finish it off. Thank you. And this staff here will speak to you afterwards, but someone's going to respond to you for service.
Good evening. I'm Al Lopes with Transit. In regards to the vehicle breakdowns, I can speak from my perspective as a provider and over the maintenance department that we expedite our maintenance staff accordingly. Whether, we contact the driver via radio, dispatch contacts us, we contact the driver. We try to troubleshoot with the driver, for instance, the door issue that wouldn't open. Sometimes that does occur from washing the vehicles in the cold weather in the morning, but the switch actuator can hung up, we'll diagnose it over the radio, to eliminate any impact on the service to the customer, we'll switch out a vehicle, whether it's in route or to the next destination or whatever the client on board. Vehicle cleanliness, we have a crew that's there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for our fleet, that we monitor it. It's monitored daily inspections through our team internally, externally, MTM. As a contractor, third-party contractor, they come on site and audit our fleet for cleanliness. You said there was issues with the van blowing off, you know, going on the road. We do our own front end alignments in-house with our technicians. We have the equipment. It was recorded on the DVI from the driver on our post trip. It's done that night. All of the DVI, the daily vehicle inspection, is monitored at the end of every day, every trip. And if there's an issue, steering, brakes, any safety-related items, we take that vehicle out of service and it does not go back into service until that defect has been addressed.
So what's the most problem? Why is complaining?
I don't know which vehicle it was. I'm just speaking on behalf of, as a transit, as a responsible for the maintenance. My staff is highly encouraged to realize that people are riding these buses. We're not transporting boxes, as the transportation industry do. It's instilled in my guys, and I got to go at home and lay my head on bed at night, in bed and get a good night's sleep, knowing that you got from point A to point B safely.
Thank you.
I just want to add that Metro Access does have a third party vendor that does 100% inspection of the fleet. These are independent of the three service delivery providers in their maintenance department. They are a totally separate entity that inspects the fleet, inspects vehicle maintenance records, and ensures, plays a big part in ensuring that the service delivery providers are really the things that Mr. Foltz just talked about, to ensure that the maintenance is being done in accordance with the contract agreement that they have with WMATA. So that's another layer of certainty that is in place for maintenance purposes and ultimately for safety purposes as well.
Thank you. Next person is Sandra Felder. Bring her mic, 3 minutes.
Good afternoon. I'm here to speak, but one issue I need to speak address. I just want to know what makes some passengers more valuable than others. How there are passengers with Metro Access can wait for an hour and a half. There are some that they can't wait for 5 minutes. They will leave no show. In my situation, I was forced to sit on a van for an hour and a half. You can't see this. I know if I have neck injury, which set me back truly. And I was on the bus for an hour and a half. And the driver, which was very annoying, you know, the driver was off socializing with people around the area. She was both with me. No passenger wants to see the driver smoking cigarettes, socializing, when you're not feeling well. I was forced to sit in that van for an hour and a half with a neck injury, which set me back with more procedures than the physical procedures I have to do. I don't understand how that person was able to have Metro Access wait for an hour and a half. And after they finally got no show, the van was proceeding to take me home. The driver alerted me that she had to go back to the same place that we just left and pick the person up again. And just, you know, I just don't know how some others get better, more privileges than others. Also, I want to speak about the lack of communication of the dispatchers. I've had so many trips canceled by dispatchers that were taken off the manifest, and I've had the drivers come and pick me up. I call a check and confirm my trips, and I've been told several times my trips were canceled by myself, but which wasn't me. It was the dispatchers canceling my trips. They finally got things together. They were sending the drivers to my house like they had a tripping session for me, which I get a no-show or cancel at the door because I refused to afford the bus. Because to my knowledge, my trip was canceled earlier by dispatcher fault, which I'm not counting, I get a counseling, I get appointed for. And one more thing, I've had over $100 in my Easy Pay, and I haven't even taken any trips. I personally suspended Metro Access myself. Instead of suspending me, I suspended them because it's too much for me to endure. The pain level, okay? And I have, where is my money? Every time I call this Easy Pay, try to add up where my money is, I get the runaround to the I just want my money back in my account like it was, and I'm not going to hold you. I just do more training with your dispatchers. It's lack of communication. Some of them speak so bad, that they speak so fast like they're auctioneers. They have to realize they're working with people that's disabled. You have to take it slow, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays. I'm sorry to hear about your concerns, Red Coral and staff are going to begin to address them and look into them.
Well, and I appreciate the feedback. Things that we can do with it, I'm not going to do the Easy Pay account, we can take a look at that and see exactly what's going on. With the dispatchers, we'll go back and I'll listen to some of these phone calls. I'd like to hear how to talk to them on the phone and what exactly is going on. With a no-show, if another client is being no-show for an hour and a half, there's something obviously quite egregious there, and I'd like to see exactly what's happening there. Because we should never be waiting an hour and a half for one customer to have someone else on board the vehicle. So there has to be, I'm hoping there's a reasonable explanation, but there should never be a reasonable explanation.
The bus was on our off button. I was told the bus was
Tuesday the 3rd, right? January?
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yes.
Thank you.